Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival, and I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Friday, January 15th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Oh, Melody.
Oh, bloodbath on Wall Street today, but they were able to bring back the numbers somewhat at the over 500 points. At one point, and I'm trying to bring up the numbers to see where we were at. I figured they'd bring it back to about 250, 300. It looks like about 395 down almost 2.5% for the Dow at 15,983. And I'm going to repeat these numbers. I keep getting updates from listeners saying that sometimes we don't get played all the way on the shortwave. Sometimes the first few minutes is a little difficult to with the reception and everything, so we'll be repeating these numbers a little bit later on in the program. The NASDAQ was down almost 3%. At one point in the day, I saw it down 4, at down 126 points at 44.88. The S&P was down 41 points, down 2% at 18.80. And I'll repeat, the Dow again was down almost 2.5%, down 395 points, 15,983. 10-year yield holding at the 2 level, 2.03, down 0.07. The euro also is holding at 109, but that is up 0.48 as there was pressure on the dollar. Foreign markets, you know, were down 1.5%, European anywhere from 2% to 2.5% in Germany. And the Shanghai, I think I saw that it was down only 2%, so they're not really giving China the blame for the big drop in today's markets, leading up to it. But if I can pull that up here. Computers are running awfully slow today.
That's because it's unseasonably warm weather.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Shanghai was down 3.5%, down over 100 points at 2,900 on the China Shanghai composite. So they did get a little bit more pressure than 2%. And so what will be interesting is we have a three-day weekend. So Monday is a holiday. Markets are closed due to, Martin Luther King. Sorry, folks.
Oh, we need to know there's a holiday.
There's a holiday, you know, Martin Luther King.
Somebody passed on or something. I don't know, but there's a holiday, and that's what's important.
Well, it's Martin Luther King anyway. So, you know, going into a 3-day weekend with these types of markets, and I didn't have a chance to follow up on it prior to the program. I don't know if Rob will have that information, but I believe there's I think we're close to some expirations going on, and that might have played a little bit into some of the tune of the devastation today in the paper markets. Gold prices, they didn't go down. Currently up at, been holding about the 1090 level, the 1090 up 10 bucks today. You know, for the most of the day, we had 1098, so, you know, a little bit of pressure, but still holding the $10 gain at 1090. Silver's up 7 at $14, again, holding there. Had some highs, had some lows, but really steadied about $14. Platinum was down 7 at 831. Palladium down 5, 491. And I'm sure that's has a lot of pressure on gold and silver as they're being in the commodity sector. And so I do expect, you know, to see that that divide become deeper and deeper as gold and silver breaks away as industrial metals. And we all know gold's not an industrial metal, but, you know, when you have that whole complex, the commodity complex get whacked and pressure on it, you know, it can distort those numbers. And that's an addition to the manipulation. USDX today, 0.13, also coming back from the lows of the day at 98.91. Crude oil, 1.55 to the downside, 29.65 closing below 30. So, again, a lot of things to put pressure in on the paper markets. Retail numbers came out for all of 2015. Purchases climbed 2.1%. That is the smallest advance of the current economic expansion. And I said yesterday there's a big difference between expansion and growth. And, you know, it's funny to watch all these, you know, financial pundits, you know, trying to figure out, well, gee, why they were lied to. Well, they told us consumers would spend their savings on, you know, from the lower gasoline prices. Well, they're not. The increase for all of 2015 followed a 3.9% gain the prior year, and it is the smallest advance since demand slumped 7.4% in 2009. So again, we're just going back to, I don't know how we say this day in, day out. The economy is not doing it as well as they want us to believe. I mean, healthcare alone will eat up any savings that people had from lower gasoline prices. Yesterday, I talked about the cost of living basket. It's up over 40% since 2008. So I don't think wages went up 40% since 2008. So it's real simple to understand how retail sales did not do well last year. We talked about the end of the hop for the holiday shopping season. They didn't do well.
But unlike some seasons, we didn't talk about it. There really weren't many news reports about not having a successful Christmas.
Well, correct. You know, it was all focused on, you know, job creations, the auto sales and so forth. And, you know, they refocused. But the biggest one was the lower gasoline prices that they thought that money would funnel through into the economy. And, you know, it's not happening. So
where did it go?
What do you mean, where did it go?
Well, it is kind of interesting. I mean, if the money had to be spent someplace, where did it go?
Well,
may not have gone into the Christmas season.
Number one, healthcare is up significantly for most people. The cost of living from 2008 is up 40%. The wages didn't go up. You know, so how are they offsetting a 40% increase in cost of living since 2008? I mean, it's pretty difficult. You know, so and then you look at these markets, you know, Apple. I don't know if I can bring up the You know, I don't know how many of the listeners are holding on to Apple. I hope not very many. I mean, they've been buying back their shares. They've been borrowing money, buying back their shares, you know, to keep their numbers up, paying dividends on borrowed money. And then people are surprised that it drops and that we've had the type of numbers that we see.
Wouldn't have surprised Isaac Newton. That's how he got his theory of gravity, by watching an apple drop.
Perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps.
It's a little known fact, Melody.
There was a couple of interesting articles that I also saw today. The Obama administration says it is halting new coal leases on federal lands until it completes a comprehensive fee review. So again, more pressure on this on the poor coal industry. He's trying to revamp the leasing program. It hasn't had any changes in more than 30 years. So if it ain't broke, why fix it? Just leave it alone. But he's all concerned about the impact of fossil fuels on the environment and on climate change.
Do you think he's really doing this to impair the coal industry or prevent pollution? Or is this an indirect way of stimulating the oil market? If we use less coal, we're going to probably use a little more oil.
No, he's been having major issues with coal. I mean, I think this is a bigger agenda. I don't think it has anything to do with the oil. I think this is just one of his things that he wants to change. He is a globalist. He is a part of the program, and this is a I think this is one of the global agreements that they came out with a lot of these trade agreements that we have no idea what's in there. I think it's probably part of the agreements that they made in Paris and the climate change meetings they had recently. He has to destroy everything in this country, and he's good at it.
Well, he hasn't destroyed everything, but he's given everything a chance. He's trying to destroy everything. He's not necessarily succeeding as often as he tries, but you got to give him credit for persistence, Melody.
Well, you tell me one area where he hasn't succeeded.
Well, he hasn't done anything to hurt, the transsexuals, gay marriages. Hasn't hurt that.
Well, I don't think the majority of the... really, Al?
Well, he just said give you an idea of something that he hadn't damaged. That would be one of the things.
He did damage it by doing that. He damaged that's a lot deeper than just that, too, Al, but I don't want to get into that today. There was something else that I found interesting. You know, I think next week the agreement with Iran and to suspend their economic sanctions is supposed to happen next week. But although the White House says it's not ready to do that because its compliance with the nuclear deal hasn't been verified, White House spokesman Josh Earnest says Iran is making important progress towards curbing its nuclear program. He says it's possible. They have already completed all the necessary steps. But you know what's interesting that I didn't realize was going on? Iran has elections right after. If the White House agrees that they have complied and the sanctions are suspended and they get their $100 and $150 billion dollars returned to them, I think it's the week after they have major elections. So a lot of these agreements with this agreement and is made with this conservative group, so to speak. Not so hardlined group. And it's interesting after these elections, you know, they could return to the hardliners and, you know,
with an extra $150 billion or whatever.
Yes. Yes. Yep. So no one's talking about those elections, and it's very important.
Another triumph for Obama coming up here. His foreign policy is where he really shines. Hard to pick whether his His signature achievement is Obamacare or foreign policy. Which do you think, Melody?
Hmm. Hard to tell.
Yeah. They're equally bad. So
there was
it's hard to say which one is best.
There was another important story today. Walmart is pulling the plug on 269 locations here and in Brazil is another major impact. I think there's in the U.S. there's going to be 154 stores closing out.
Yeah, they're smaller stores. They're not the super centers. They're express Walmart Express stores, which I don't know, but I think maybe they were intended to compete with 7-Elevens or something. I don't know if that's true. I mean, they would be bigger, yeah. but maybe that was part of the market they were going after, but they haven't succeeded, and so they're shutting them down. Is it significant information, or is it just interesting? They came up with an idea. They thought they'd compete with these small stores. Didn't work out, so they're closing them down. Is it just a reflection of, well, they took a shot and it didn't work out? Or is it evidence that the economy is in a state of contraction? I think the real point to it is if the economy was expanding, if we were recovering, they would probably have hung on to those express stores. More than likely, they wouldn't have been as bad as they have been. More than likely, they'd sit back and say, well, things are improving. Maybe these will go in the next year. They might give them another year. I think it's mostly because of the economy. I think it's mostly a sign of the economy contracting. On the other hand, it's only their express stores. So it's not a big sign, but it's another one of those leaves in the breeze.
And, you know, something interesting that is happening where I'm located at is the schools, all schools, not just high schools, but the junior schools, all schools have been getting bomb threats. And it happened earlier in this week to just the schools in one county. And today it happened again, and it was extended to another county. This time they did send everyone home. Earlier, it wasn't considered. They took the threat seriously, and they certainly brought in the dogs and everything to make sure that there were no bombs in any of these schools. But today, there was a larger threat attached to these bomb threats, and it was, for those that don't get killed in the explosions when they leave the school, they will be shot. And so they took it one, and that's a pretty powerful threat, and they extended it to two counties. And you don't hear any of this. And I was told that these bomb threats in these schools actually started on the West Coast, and it was like an automated type deal that just kind of flowed from the West Coast to the East Coast. But yet I haven't heard much about to the degree and how often this was happening and to how many schools, but to go from, a bomb threat to the point of, who doesn't die in the bomb explosions will be shot afterwards, is pretty powerful.
Men placed on Obamacare, and that'll really get you. They're concerned about as much as anything is kids hear these things, they say, ooh, that's cool. I mean, if they hear it on the media, they'll want to call in a bomb threat of their own.
Well, there's always been bomb threats at school from kids that are doing this. But I think the timing could be perhaps, I'm not saying it's, but it's amazing that how quiet that they've kept this. And that's...
Well, bomb goes off, we'll hear about it for sure. But, this is more nonsense probably. Let's take a break for some commercials. And when we get back, Rob West should be joining us from Rocky Mountain. Can't think of the last name of his business. RME. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now. American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. Our guest is Rob West. He is the Senior Financial Strategist at RME Advisors, and he's located in Colorado, and we'll talk to Rob about whatever it is that Rob thinks is important to talk about right now. Hello, Rob.
Hi, Al. Hi, Melody.
Hi, Rob.
What's happening?
Oh, wow. Just, wintertime in Colorado, and if you like to ski, you're a happy person. And I was listening to your commentary a little bit earlier, and you're mentioning what happened to all the sales, or where did all the money go. And sometimes I think a lot of what the velocity of our economy runs on is really credit. And so, if the credit gets cut off, and I think a lot of people are getting a little bit more, typically in January, I spent in December, maybe I shouldn't have spent so much, and just things kind of slow down. So,
kind of like a hangover.
Maybe I shouldn't have
drank so much. Maybe I shouldn't have spent so much. I'm going to be on my good behavior for at least another couple of weeks.
Yeah, but, and Melanie and I were talking earlier and looking at this stock market arrangement and so many things. I rarely talk about being so direct, but working with the Wall Street gang like I did years ago, I just don't really have a lot of trust and confidence. If you're making money, or you're watching your bank account or your stock account or whatever you're doing it on the internet and you're seeing it on the screen. But there's really not a lot of guarantee that if you cash out with a lot of chips that they're actually going to send you the money. And you know, a lot of people don't know that. And, you know, the broker-dealers are backed up by an insurance arrangement, which, frankly, isn't nearly as strong as within the bank arrangement. And the bank arrangement, you can't trust that either because, you know, what was there, 5 or 6 bail-ins already in Italy from some of these banks? And that went unnoticed. What do you trust, you know? Buy some gold and keep it with you, you know?
Yeah, in the end, you're going to have to become dependent on yourself, and you're going to have to trust yourself. And that's easy to say, but it's a hard thing to do. Most people are looking for someone to tell them what to do. And it has less to do probably with intelligence than it does with courage. People are a little bit afraid to go ahead and do something to save themselves. They need someone to kind of help, hold their hand and encourage them to say, okay, you should do this or you should do that. And then people, oh, okay, I'll do what you say. And we live at a time when that may be a dangerous attitude. You need to kind of, you need to act as a function of courage, and you can do that with advice from other people, but you need to act. And that's the most important thing, and I think a lot of people aren't. And that's there's the cause for concern.
Well, what happens, Rob, is a lot of these brokerage houses, I mean, you have these margin calls that come into play. They don't have enough funds in-house to pay for the ones that they don't get money for, and the next thing you know, there's no more money left, and they are out there scrambling to borrow money, and they're only able to borrow so much. And therefore, you know, they can close in a very short period of time. You have a couple days like we've had, and it'll be interesting to see how many have been affected through this situation, if any smaller ones have closed and so forth. I mean, we had one close just not too long ago, in the fall, I believe.
Well, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, in the 80s, I worked a lot with the Wall Street firms, and us brokers were given an incentive to open up one company called it a command account, but there's different names for them depending on the company. What it actually meant was they would like for you to open up an account. You place your securities in it, and you get a debit card, and you can automatically margin with that account. And but if you looked at the small print, it also said in there they could hypothecate your account. So what that means is if the firm wants to do some trading or some betting or whatever they're going to do, they can use your account as collateral for the trades they want to do. And a lot of people don't know that.
Hypothecate is just a fancy word for steal.
Yeah.
Instead of saying we can steal your money, we don't steal your money. We're bankers. We will hypothecate. You see? There's a difference.
Yeah, and not a single person ever asked me about that. And quite frankly, I wasn't encouraged to expose all the conditions of the small print. But, you know, there's things out there that are unknown.
That's part of the problem with all of this, is people want to invest their money. They want to invest their wealth. I don't know that anyone has any money unless they have gold and silver, and they just hang on to that. But they want to invest the wealth that they've accumulated in the form of paper dollars or digital currency and the rest of that sort of thing. And that wealth reflects how much work they've done, how much they have saved over. They have a certain amount of income. They have a certain amount of expenses. Their wealth reflects the difference between that. How much have you saved? Well, they'd like to save it, but and they'd like to invest it where they can make more money on it, in part because Federal Reserve has reduced interest rates where you can't just put it in the bank and make anything. So you've got to look for an investment. And where I'm going with this is you talk about people looking at these contracts and not reading the fine print. It's not just that they don't read it. They don't understand it. And that's where they become vulnerable to people who will mislead them. So, well, we're going to just do this, and we're going to hypothecate. Your money will be hypothecated, and you'll like it. It's a wonderful thing, and just sign here. And they do. And they don't read the document, and even if they do read it, they don't understand it. And I wonder if there's something that can be done about that. Can these documents be simplified, do you think, Rob, to where an average person can understand them, or must they be written in language that's so complex that most people just, I don't know, I'm just going to sign my name down here and hope for the best?
Well, so many people were looking to their advisor, their broker, and they would just expect an explanation or an interpretation, and they would never question it. So,
yeah.
And it's too bad that just a lot of people are just that that accommodative. But, you know, Melanie and I were talking earlier about the bond market, and it's so much larger. But, okay, what am I talking about? Corporate bonds, municipal bonds, government bonds. I mean, no, frankly, there's so much money that circulates within the bond market, and when, particularly when the government brings up bonds, or you hear the Federal Reserve buying bonds from the government, monetizing the government debt, people don't really understand what that means. And it basically means they press a button and digitally this money gets created, and they put it into the system in exchange for taking ownership of some bonds, whether they're governments or whether mortgage-backed securities or whatever it might be. Well, what I'm telling you is there is no money behind any of this stuff at all. And when it comes to the bond market, and here we are, we're talking about these markets and that. Do you know how many people are on food stamps? Do you know how many people actually are in stocks? You know, I don't think it's nearly what we're giving it way too much attention. There's so many average people out there that they just can't, they don't have that kind of money to do anything with it, you know, in those markets. But I'm telling you, when it comes to the bond market, it is not like the stocks. The stock market is built on an auction block. And that's what the traders do. They make a market in these stocks, and they buy and sell relative to their markup. But it's an instantaneous auction market driven by computers. And the average guy getting in there and placing his order for 500 shares of something on E-Trade or whatever, I don't care how quick you hit the mouse on your computer, you're not going to keep up with those computerized trading programs. You're just not going to do it. When it comes to the bond market, it's not an auction at all. There has to be someone making a secondary market to either own or resell the bonds. And particularly in the municipal.
What do you mean by that? What is the primary market, and how does it differ from the secondary market?
Let's pick a brand of a bond. Let's say it's a U.S. government bond, which is very large and typically very liquid. So there would be buyers lining up to have the ability to acquire the bonds should they become available. Not true at all with the municipal bond market, where we're doing school bonds and sewer bonds and, you know, things that help run a municipality. But in either case, there has to be a buyer. And then the stock market, being different than the bond market, the primary marketplace in stocks is the market maker on Wall Street, who operates with their own money to buy and sell the stocks. And if it gets pretty tough out there, they don't have to buy and they don't have to sell. They can just close down their trading desk, and there won't be a market for that particular stock until he decides to open it up. So, but the bond market is basically, particularly in the governments, it's really a substitute for cash. And there really isn't that much cash around relative to credit. And when you think about what a bond is, that's credit. There's no cash behind that bond. So it can get really scary if you let your mind move into areas of what you really trust and what you would rely on. Because when you enter into these different markets, stocks or bonds, you're trusting someone else to make good on giving you your fair value for what you think it's worth. See? And that's a whole different game than gold and silver, particularly if you take physical delivery, which is the only way to go. You can see what you have. And so you don't have to broadcast it, but I know some people that's got fairly nice positions of the metals under dirt, buried in their yard. That is so smart. But we've just listened to all the financial arrangements, the six or seven companies that control all the news. They always talk about the stock market and, you know, country club jargon and all that. But really, I don't think there's that many people. The majority of people that are probably in stocks and bonds, if they're still continuous savers with their 401ks and that, they're making periodic contributions, and that's where the money's going. But they still don't know about what they're invested in by and large. They really don't. And
you know, I've got a couple of headlines here. It's just where they don't know where they've got this invested and rested. I don't know that they understand how serious some of these problems are. Royal Bank of Scotland, in a headline, vanishing cap, prize, everything, sell everything in a deflationary crisis needs. What they're complaining about, in part, is that let me see the other headline I've got here. It's $2.1 trillion erased from U.S. stocks in 6 days. That's back in August of 2015, last year. Another trillion disappeared the first week of this year. There is something strange about $3.1 trillion in value disappearing in a matter of 5 or 6 months. It raises a question. It's not inexplicable, but it kind of raises the question, did that alleged wealth ever really exist? Right?
Exactly.
And they didn't say that the wealth was transferred from the people that deposited money in the bank, for example, to the bank. Or it was transferred from people invested in stocks to Wall Street traders. They said it vanished. It disappeared. All right? It was like David Copperfield. And you got to wonder, was there ever a building there? Was there a truck there? What did he make disappear? Was there really something there in the first place? And people are investing in this as if it's real. And maybe it's not. Now, I know that the value can, you know, with anything else. I mean, you can buy something that's worth $20,000 today and $15,000 tomorrow. Value can disappear. I get that. But still, there's something strange, to me at least, about $3.1 trillion disappearing out of the markets in the last 5 or 6 months.
Well, and by the same token, Al, how did that value get there?
Yeah. Well, it got there from people taking the wealth that they had saved. They go out and they earn $100,000 a year. They save $20,000 a year. They take the $20,000 in the form of paper dollars they invested in the market, and then maybe it just disappears. It doesn't,
well,
you're not robbed. It's like being bombed. It's not like,
yeah.
And it's a strange situation, and it's the sort of thing where the average person who has that $20,000 to invest, maybe they need to think about this and say, look, what do I want to put this into where I think I can get it back out, you know, 2 years, 5 years from now? Do I want paper? Do I want digits? Do I want electrical digits? Is that where I want to put my wealth? Let's talk about that when we return. We'll take a break here for some commercials. I'm Alfred Attisk here with Melody Cedarstrom and our guest, Rob West from RME Advisors. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on financial survival. Our guest is Rob West from RME Advisors in Colorado. And we talked a little bit about the bond market earlier. And very few people, I mean, as little as we know about stocks, most people know 10 times as much about stocks as they do about bonds. And yet, which market is more important to the economy? Which market do you think is more important, Rob?
It's the bond market.
I agree with you 100%. And yeah. It's something I'm only learning to appreciate just in the last couple of months. We were led to watch, oh, my gosh, the Dow Jones is doing this, that, or the other. Oh, the stock market's doing this, that, or the other. Do you think we are being intentionally misled and encouraged to focus on stocks when the real mover is the bond market?
Well, I don't know if it's intentional or not. Stocks just have a romantic twist to them because people have the idea that their stock's going to be a 10 bagger or something like that, you know, go up 10-fold or this, you know, this new idea or something. And
that's true. Bonds seem surprisingly dull.
Yeah. And I'm surprised that the bond market continues on when for these years we've had basically zero interest rates. Mm-hmm. And I think Melody was talking about this earlier with companies buying back their stock. Well, a lot of people don't understand a lot about that. But when money's basically free, they can just borrow and then go back and buy back their own shares to bring more value of those shares back to the company. And in the corporate world, the key executives have huge incentives to do this type of thing, to raise the value of the company. But at the end of the day, the continuous borrowing, even though it's a 0% interest rate, it needs to be repaid. And so I don't think it's doing a
they are borrowing by means of bonds. Isn't that true?
Yeah. Yeah. And while some
this
of it
is a little
probably
bit of borrowing from Peter to pay Paul. It might not be exactly robbing Peter to pay Paul, but it's borrowing from Peter to pay Paul. And you have to wonder how this is going to work out, because they're going deeper into debt in order to buy their stock back at a time when we may be in a deflationary period. The dollar is growing more valuable. It means that the debt they're going into is increasing in terms of purchasing power. The real value of the debt is rising. Yeah, they're not paying interest on it. But what may be happening in terms of deflation, and can they withstand? Will they be able to resist the push to bankruptcy that might flow from borrowing, from issuing too many bonds and going too deep into debt? Is there an, are they really getting over when they buy their stocks? Is that absolutely a smart thing to do? Or do you think as time goes by and they look, oh my gosh, we bought all those stocks with these bonds. I don't know how we're going to pay the bonds. You see what I'm saying? Is this a valuable strategy? Or maybe, or is there a potential for some liability here?
I think longer term, there's more exposure that's negative to the company than the shorter term positive. And in the shorter term, a lot of the bonuses and things that are paid to the executives are based on these kind of maneuvers. Now, there's another substantially large marketplace in terms of the money market itself, which is very short term borrowing. So it's not in that it's like a bond, thinking, 1, 3, 5, 7, 10 year bonds. But the money markets are typically uninsured and is meant to be a short term arrangement for companies to make payroll and municipalities to have, in and out liquidity for weeks or maybe months, but not on a long-term basis. And I was mentioning with Melody earlier in a conversation, as much as I know in these 45 years I've been in and out of this type of business for a long time, there's just so many things that I don't trust my own. I don't trust my own money to this stuff. And particularly when...
There are a number of stories that they're issuing more stock certificates than they have shares of stock. I mean, it may be you think you've got stock. I've got 10,000 shares in General Motors. Well, it may be that four or five other people think they've got the same 10,000 shares. Now, I can't tell you that those rumors are God's truth, but I've heard them from sources that may know what they're talking about. And maybe you can confirm or deny whether that's a, are they issuing more stock certificates than there are actually shares of stock?
Well, they're supposedly tracked by the QSIP number, and it should have a unique pairing off with so many shares represented by one certificate with that QSIP number. But it's all created by humans, okay? So... could there be some truth to that? Could be. I don't know. You'd have to call in all the shares and do an audit.
And how would we do that? They're trading. I have no idea how many shares of stock they trade on an average day. Can they really keep track of those millions of shares that are moving? I mean, it's like counting the pieces, the leaves in a tornado. That tornado is spinning awfully fast, and we don't really know if there's 100,000 leaves or 100 million leaves in that tornado. People tell us, they say they know how many leaves are on the tornado, but does anyone know?
Well, that was, in my opinion, one of the encouragements to open up these types of accounts, which would keep your shares on deposit, and you would never have the physical certificate. You see, who would know? And it can be hypothecated, and you wouldn't even know that. So, I mean, it was pretty much a discouragement to for people to buy shares of stock and ask to have the certificate delivered. And the cost involved was substantial. So, I'll just leave.
That's another thing. Imagine I had the certificate for some stock, and imagine I wanted to sell that stock. I'm going to have to surrender the certificates on that stock. We're going to put them in the mail, and you're buying those certificates. And by the time we make the agreement, and I put the certificates in the mail to you directly, or perhaps to some third party who's in between you and me, it's going to be a week or 10 days maybe before you get those certificates into your hand, and maybe longer than that. Now, if you want to speculate in the market, that means you want to get in there. How's that work with this micro trading where they're using computers to trade in just milliseconds? We can't be moving these certificates around in milliseconds. Which means maybe we can sell more stock than we have certificates.
Well, and in your analysis, you've also forgotten that you may have to provide a stock power and get a medallion guarantee from a bank that verifies the authenticity of what you're going to send me.
I understand.
Yeah.
This is a tedious process, and it takes time, and it's conducive to long-term investing. But for short-term speculation, it's not even can't possibly be maintained for short-term speculators where I buy, sell, I buy, sell, I buy, sell. You can't move those certificates as fast as you can do that, as fast as you can speculate. It opens the whole system up to abuse and fraud. And how would you prove it? I mean, if you really got into this and I sold you some stock and you were concerned about receiving the certificates, who do you sue? Do you sue me? You sue the guy before me who had the stock, or the guy before him, or the guy before him? Who was the last guy to have the certificates? Has anybody seen the certificates? How do we find out where they are?
Yeah, and I would imagine there's so many stock trades that's happening so quickly that there's not even a certificate.
Yeah, it can't be.
Yeah, and which if someone just wants physical delivery, then they'll print it up, assign it to QSIP, make the transfers, charge you the appropriate fees, then you take it home and put it in your safety area in your house or something, you know, and that's just, particularly with the internet activity and all that, it's all that, what we were just talking about, the old-fashioned, you know.
It's certainly not conducive to investing. It may be conducive to speculating, but it's not conducive to investing. That to me, the way the system operates right now, you can't find the certificates. Here, let him put a gun to your head and see if you can produce any certificates. You probably can't. Right? Well, not many people can.
Al, Melody, listen, if what we've been discussing here, what do you think the liquidity situation would be if every stock and bond would be redeemed this Friday?
Well, the price is
enough cash
there's not
in the
money.
World.
Yeah.
We're trusting stuff. We're just trusting stuff.
So what
stuff.
Is the remedy to this, Bob? We've got maybe 4 minutes left, something like that. 3.5, 4 minutes left. What can people do to protect themselves? Two questions. We've got enough time for maybe two questions. One, is the bond market is it as confused and vulnerable to the kind of problems we've been discussing here as the stock market, or is the bond market technically safer? The certificates, the bonds, whatever, does the same problem exist in both markets? And if it does, what can people do to protect themselves from this vulnerability?
Well, the bond market, by definition, has more collateral security over whoever issued the bond than does their stock. So if we're talking about a corporate, if I got a lot of corporate bonds, that has first call when it comes to insolvency. The common stockholders have the last call on any asset of the money. And then in between there is preferred stock. But I think knowing what we all know now, the best in my we're a financial education company, is to bring all these alternatives up for an understanding, and you choose some of the best things that might suit you. And in my opinion, a lot of it is reducing your paper worth into things that are tangible and usable. And if you know, between land or house or, you know, gold and silver is always good down the road. And if you can lay your hands on it and see it and count it, I don't know that there's a better solution for most everyone else. Now, if you're a multi-millionaire, then to have that kind of gold, you know, at your house may want to rethink some of that strategy. But let's face it, this is not mainstream for people. So we just need to bring common sense back into the equation. And I'm telling you, almost everyone is betting on digital something to have a future value to be able to exchange it for a good or service in the future. And I don't promote that as being a mainstream financial plan. Now, I was a certified financial planner for 25 years. My planning today is a lot different than I had in the past, what I did in the past. And I hope people can get some value from that. But give Melody a call and just have some good discussion. About.
You know what, Rob? You'd be surprised how many of my clients, whether it be one trade, two trades, multiple trades over the years, that have accumulated very large amounts of product. So, I mean, it's, you know, the key thing is people have to take, well, my view, you have to take a review of what you have. And position yourself accordingly, and what's suitable for each. You know, you can have two people who have the same amount of money, and you could go in two different directions because it's suitable for each one. And you just don't find that anymore. It's a one shoe fits all, and that's not, you know, it just doesn't work that way. There's so few choices in today's world when it comes to where people can put their money. And I think people today want to secure what they have. They don't want to lose what they have. But yet, you know, the mainstream media, even people who write about what's happening in this country and so forth, you know, talk about gold going to 700 and 600. And they put a fear into people that, in my mind and my experience, is wrong. There's a fault. They're wrong. And people should ask questions to find out what is really true and what isn't, so they can make informed decisions.
All right, we're going to have to let it go at that because we're about a minute past closing time, and we're done for the week. I want to thank all of you for listening. Melody and I will be back on Monday. Thank you, Rob, for being our guest. Rob West from RME Advisors. Be back on Monday. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Rob, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's you.